Dog Works Radio is sponsored by Alaska Dog Works. Check out their website at alaskadogworks.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto from Dog Works Radio, and you are listening to our Mushing Radio segment. Today, we're joined by guest Becky Tucker. She is calling in from New Hampshire, and she is a dog musher with Outlaw Ridge Sled Dogs. Here's the show.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto from Mushing Radio, and you are listening to us on KVRF 89.7 in the Mattsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can hear us over on Apple Podcasts. Just search for Dog Works Radio. We're also available on social media under the same name. And today we are talking to Becky Tucker, calling in from New Hampshire. Becky, how's it going?
Going well.
Well, thank you for joining us today. How are things up in your neck of the woods?
Finally starting to cool down.
Excellent. We're just starting to get flurries here. I think it's going to be pretty soon before we're out on sleds again here in Alaska and looking forward to the mushing season. When do you guys typically jump on sleds in your area?
If we're lucky, December, but it could be January.
Oh, my goodness. So it's pretty late for you guys up there.
It is. It's gotten later and later over the last couple of years. Funny thing is I moved here from Connecticut 4 years ago, and my first winter was great. Since then, it's been hard.
You know, that's sort of how it is in Alaska. We talk a lot about this on this show. It seems that we're all weather forecasters as mushers as well. And, you know, when I moved up here in 2010, it was an excellent winter for the first couple of years, and we had quite a few bad winters, and then last year we had a great one. So hopefully all the winter is well through all the mushing communities, and all of us do as best as we can out on the trails. But Becky, before we jump in, can you tell us who you are and what you're all about, please?
Well, my name is Becky Tucker, and I'm all about running my team. I mean, everything in my life is completely all about the dogs.
So it's all about the dogs. Where do you live in New Hampshire? How close are you to trails? Do you have to truck your dogs to places, that sort of thing?
So I live in what's called Dorchester, New Hampshire, and it's kind of smack dab in the middle. 4 years ago, I own a house in Connecticut and was a physical therapist for canines after I stopped being a veterinary technician. When I lost my job, I realized there wasn't much else going on can-am Connecticut, and I had run the can-am 250 for the first time in my rookie year in 2014. And living in Connecticut, it's hard to run a distance team and working full-time, but I loved being out there so much for 250-mile races that I wanted to move north. And I started looking into it, and a friend of mine kind of said, hey, why don't you just move up here to my friend's house and run the dogs? So that's what we did. 4 years ago, I packed up everything I own in 2 weeks and moved up here into Dorchester, New Hampshire. And I'm very lucky that I can basically run the dogs completely out of the yard. That means ATV training and for also with the sleds, which was very different in Connecticut, because in Connecticut, I could load the dogs up in 5 or 10 minutes and I had the access of one or two trails, but come Thursday night by 5 o'clock, I'd have to pack all the dogs up to go run somewhere in New Hampshire or Maine to have snow trails for sled, because there's no groomer, and the trails are very minimal in Connecticut. So it was nice not to be on the road every single weekend.
You know, Becky, when people think of Connecticut, they think close proximity to New York City and all of the mm-hmm. hustle and bustle with that. Did you live out in the country towards, I guess, western or northern Connecticut?
I was more southern, so yeah, totally in the country. I was kind of in the no man's land for Connecticut. It's a place called Voluntown, and it's right there on the cusp of, like, Hope Valley, Rhode Island. So it's not much into the Connecticut border.
Okay. So when did you get started in mushing itself? Did it come at you pretty quickly? Had you grown up around? I know you had mentioned that you were a vet tech at a and a dog physical therapist, but did mushing come up to you relatively quickly, or was it something you grew up with?
It came up very quickly, and it was actually all because of one Siberian. In 1998, I was working at an animal shelter. It was before I got into the veterinary technician world, and a woman called to see if we would euthanize her one-year-old Siberian. Basically, she'd always had little Shih Tzu dogs, and her son had backed over one on Christmas and decided to bring home the runt of the litter of a Siberian. And he became too much work for her, so he basically lived in a little chicken wire coop out back. I went and took a look at him, and he was pretty much the closest thing to a wolf you'll ever see. He'd had no contact with people. He had no shelter. He even lived in like a little hole he had dug in the ground. So
wow.
I thought this could be great, and I brought him home. I did realize quickly he had a lot of power. And then I found out they do what's called rig racing, recreational. They use, you know, the three-wheeled rigs in Connecticut. And suddenly that started, and he did great at it. He enjoyed it. I had fun, which then meant I was going to rescue every nightmare Siberian out there. And that's how I created my first team.
And how long did that take before you built up a formidable team and, you know, where you're at today and running the bigger races like the Can-Am?
I'd say probably in early 2000, I realized that besides all of the pet Siberians out there, there were also some Siberians that just didn't work in other kennels. So I would go and kind of adopt them, and you could see the difference between the pet dogs and the actual working Siberian. As that got more and more, and the more power and the energy they had, I started doing longer distances because suddenly now I had 10 and 12. What started with 5-mile races went to 15s and 30s and 40s. And in 2008, I fell off an ATV, no dogs involved, and had a head trauma. And I pretty much, they called me dead on the scene. I was on a ventilator for 5 days and wasn't supposed to survive. That was the year I had just decided to try doing 100-mile races.
Wow.
That took a couple more years for me to actually be able to do after recovery. But in 2013, I decided we started doing the hundreds, and I loved it so much that we placed well enough in some of the races to qualify for running the Can-Am 250. And I'll be honest, the Can-Am 250 for my entire life of mushing was always out of my league. That was way too big of a race. I worked full time. I didn't have the dogs that were ready for it. I didn't know if I could personally handle it. But after my accident, something that happened to me was I decided it was time to live, meaning I would never say no to something new. And if there was something, a new adventure ahead of me, it was time to take it. And that's when I ran the first 250 in 2014. And that really started
so,
the bug.
So in your bio, I love what you say, and you had just described it. You say, in 2008, I danced with the Grim Reaper. I survived death, and since then, my focus is to live and always do what I love to do. That is such an awesome quote. I'm definitely going to use that on your page for sure. But were you running a team then, or were you just out on your ATV when this accident happened?
Nope, I was just out on the ATV, and it was nothing major. It happened, you know, I was doing like 5 miles per hour, and the handles locked up. So it had actually, it was kind of funny. It was only probably the second time in my life I've ever been on an ATV without a dog team.
To show why everybody should be wearing helmets, huh?
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of a passe, that's sort of a passe joke, because I don't ever see any mushers onto ATVs with helmets. Do you?
No. And, you know, we have some in New England that are starting to wear them for racing on the, with the sleds, which I understand. For my first year, they made me wear one, and I did. And I just, it's just something I've never cared to do. I think I'll just stick with
right.
how things are.
You know, that is a recent phenomenon here in Iditarod as well. The last few years, as I mentioned, we had really bad snow years, and it was real tough going on the Iditarod Trail for several of the mushers, and you would see guys in helmets and even a musher or two in hockey pads, which was really interesting because, you know, it's no joke to crash on a sled, even though you're only going – you know, 10 to 15 miles an hour, however fast you're going down the trail, you can still get pretty banged up, can't you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've been there.
So, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the part of the country where you live. I haven't had a guest on the show from New England in quite a while, but as you know, there's a heck of a lot of mushing history in those parts of the country. You know, Arthur Walden was there in that part of the country. Leonard Sepulveda made his way down there. Mm-hmm. Gene Breyer made his way down there. Lots of history there. How come that has become how come that was such a hotbed of mushing? Was it just a population issue back in the early days of the sport in, you know, the 20s and 30s, or was there another reason?
I have no idea. I mean, that was way before my time. And I mean, there's a lot of great trails down here.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't had a chance, read up on it a little bit, because there is mm-hmm. some amazing stories in your neck of the woods for sure. So let's jump over to now you moved to Connecticut. You're getting ready to race in the bigger races like the Can-Am 250 and, on your way to becoming a distance musher. I always ask the question about folks that also have full-time jobs and try to run these distance races together. How does that work into your schedule? Are you one of those folks that, works the 9 to 5 and then runs half the night and sleeps very little in the winter and gets up and does it again?
Yep, pretty much. My first job, and I just came back to it, I worked at an emergency animal hospital. So you have a whole idea of shifts there. Usually my shifts are 12-hour days. And I've just always been someone, I'm not one to sleep much, which is what gives me quite the perk for the Can-Am. 3 to 4 hours is enough for me. I'm done.
So you had mentioned also, Becky, that you started out with a bunch of rescue dogs and in particular Siberians. And on your picture that we're going to post on your page, you have an absolutely beautiful team. Where do your dogs come from now? Do some of them still come from that rescue line that you had several years ago, or have you, invested, so to speak, in some, I don't want to say better, but you know what I'm saying.
Right, I know where you're going.
race kennels or something like that.
I think in 2004, that's when I started bringing, adopting some of the more race-line Siberians. So the rescue dogs were a great start. Loved them to pieces. They actually taught me a lot of things. It was a good thing way to learn together. But in 2004, I noticed that there's different lines, like the Sapala line, the Zero line, and I started bringing home some of those. I had one particular male that was incredible that I then started to breed to a couple of my Siberians. And what's happened with that is I now have, I think I'm pretty much 50-50 with the Siberians and the Alaskans because my Sibes are really tall, long, leggy dogs. I'm 5'7". And when my boys stand up, they're as tall as I am. They're also, for the Siberians, very short-coated. They're nowhere near, like I laugh at people when they say, oh, so you have like the snow dog. No, not even close. Taller, lengthier,
right.
Shorter coat. So when I started looking at the Alaskans are an interesting, they're just kind of the mushroom's version of a mutt.
Yep.
And some are super thin-coated, houndy-looking. Some look very sidey and wolfy and I think one of my first lines was I actually got the pleasure to meet Ed Steelstra, who has run the Iditarod a few times. And I really liked his line, and I brought home a couple dogs from him. And Beckwith. There's a couple different lines in there that I've actually then bred to my Siberians because I don't really go out of the yard.
Okay. So for folks that are listening that may not know, the major differences between the two, how can you best compare and contrast the Alaskan Huskies that you have and the Siberian still in your team compared to, what most people think of as a sled dog? You'd mentioned, you have the sled dogs, and they've seen them on the movies or TV shows or whatever, and they think of the fluffy Siberian that is probably the same one that's laying around on the couch.
Right. I totally just missed that conversation. Question.
Oh, no, the question was, how can you compare and contrast the differences between your Alaskans and your Siberians,
Okay.
Whether it be in attitude or speed, et cetera?
You know, So what is the one thing that's a big joke in the mushing community, I mean, you've had to have heard this before, is that Siberians, the big thing with them is that they only give you 75%, whereas Alaskans give you 110%. And I used to joke over the years and say, my tribe give me 95%, which I actually really like that fact that they do keep a little in reserve. The difference with the Alaskan is they don't ever keep anything in reserve. So you have to be more careful to make sure they're not going too fast. You definitely have to control it a lot more. Whereas the sides, I might want to call them up a little bit, call them down. The Alaskans, you definitely, they will give you 110%. And especially when they're young, they have to learn to, endurance is a big deal. Personality-wise, what I can tell you is a big difference. My sides are very independent. They love me, but they're going to walk up to me and say, hey, mom, how's it going? And give me, the Alaskans are very needy.
Right.
So the whole world revolves around me.
Excellent. Thank you for
that
description.
A good thing, that's probably what. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. That's okay.
No, I think that's a good thing, because I think that's why all the Alaskans get to run loose a lot more than the Siberians do, you know. You see a lot of people at checkpoints where the dogs just are dropped and going to the bathroom and going back to the truck.
Yeah, if you've had a Siberian do that, I don't think you would ever see him or her again. I think they would run until they fell over.
So, you know, what's funny is that that's an interesting thing about what you put in, what you know from your dogs, what you expect and what you train them for. Because I do. I have 9 that I can completely cut loose and they're not going anywhere.
Wow, that's
excellent. And I
love
the fact that it's different, but yes.
So now let's jump over and talk a little bit about racing. You talked about the Can-Am. You talked about doing some other races in your part of the country. Are you hoping to venture out a little bit and run in some other mid-distance races, say, in Wisconsin, Michigan? I know it's far from you, considering you have, you know, a job that sort of ties you down there. What are your goals in the near future?
I absolutely want to go out and do the UP and the Bear Grease. And it's been something that I've been playing with for the last 2 years. Unfortunately, you know, there's always the same thing with mushers. You know, my dog Chuck needed work. There's this. And to know that I want to do those things means I have to make sure that I kind of bank some extra money, because that's a long trip out there. For me, that's a couple of days to get out there. The other thing is I feel like there needs to be a lot more detail. And before, I certainly would want my dogs in the truck for 5 days. So it's a matter of where would we stop halfway? Where could we do a training run or a run? You know, you can't just – I don't want them to be sitting in the truck for that long, because this would be our longest trip.
Right.
So there's a lot of details I would want to work out. Besides
and,
the
you know,
crash.
That – of course. You know, that is quite of a trek for you. And, of course, there are – you know, if you had the time, you could sort of make a little race circuit out of it and do a couple of races in the – you know, in the same stretch. And, of course, I guess that would be more bang for your buck, so to speak. But, yeah, that's a huge commitment. And, you know, I hear that a lot for folks that are either wanting to come up here to Alaska to race, or Alaskans that want to go back down to the lower 48 and race in things like the Stage Stop or the Bear Grease or something. That is almost a full – season commitment for us going down there, or for folks coming up here. It's not something you can just jump in the truck and do. And it's very similar for you. It's almost halfway across the country from New Hampshire to, you know, to Duluth, Minnesota. That's a pretty good trek.
Right.
So the next thing I want to ask you about is, I have two more points before we close. The first one is, I'm intrigued about your job. You had said that you were a physical therapist for dogs, or in the vet world. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that? Because most people think, you know, if their dog is injured, they go to the vet, they get all healed up or operations or whatever, and then they are required to do a lot of that extra stuff on their own. And I don't think a lot of folks know that physical therapy is even available for their pets.
Yeah, it's starting to pop up here and there, but it is an amazing trait. I did physical therapy and sports conditioning for 5 years. So I worked with actually a lot of the police dogs, a lot of show dogs. They're just to get them more fit for the shows. You know, all your handsome labs and pointers in the show world, they want some muscle on those dogs. So what comes with conditioning also comes with physical therapy. I used to work with a place that had an underwater treadmill. So that's great to build muscle, but it's also great for dogs that have arthritis. because what it does is takes the weight off of all the joints and gets them to stretch out and be more comfortable. The other amazing thing is called laser therapy. And this is one of those things you know, seeing is believing. I knew that laser therapy would be for post-op QT dogs with staples or sutures, incisions that you would want to be lasering it. But I've also watched a lot of dogs and athletes in the working dog field come in with what's called like the iliopsoas muscle strain, just being sore in their back. And the laser therapy actually helps that greatly. So all that does is speed up the good cells to kick out the bad cells 3 times faster than any of our NSAIDs can do or anything else that you would, you know, your vet might prescribe to your veterinarian. So it was my entire life being a racer, you know, in the very beginning when I started running, I used to be towards the back of the pack. And that was fine for me. I've always just loved being out there. But something I watched is I always watched the teams go by me. And I watched their gait and how they held their head and how they held their tail and how were their shoulders extending. And so I've always been really interested in gait analysis. And I met a girl that had an issue with one of her dogs that worked for a physical therapist. And when I walked by it, I said, right front leg. And she said, no, I think it's this left hind leg. Anyway, she went and talked to the physical therapist, and I was right on 3 times when she had had issues. So that's how I actually scored that job. And it was amazing, and it's great for, especially for a musher. You know, I've had my dogs, you know, come down a hill really fast and, you know, stretch out their groin the wrong way, and then you go in and you laser therapy, and, you know, there's a lot of exercises you can do for them. So everything from the dogs that are arthritic or have any injuries, physical therapy is actually really amazing.
You know, Becky, that laser is, it's a miracle. We've used it on some of our older dogs, you know, the dogs that are old and, you know, sort of hunched around in the dog yard, and we'll take them into our vet and she breaks out that laser machine, and after a few treatments, they are walking like new dogs. I wish I could afford one of those those handheld, you know, it's about the size of a small backpack, I guess, is the size of hers. But man, those sure are pricey, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yeah, if there was a Santa Claus, it would be the thing I would ask for too.
Yeah, I stand by that treatment 100%. I think if every dog owner that has an older dog could, you know, just take their dogs down to, whether it's their vet or a physical therapist or whatever, and just go over, you know, a treatment or two. I think our vet only charged like $15 a segment or something like that, a section of their body, and it was well worth the treatment for sure. Okay, Becky, so the next thing I'm interested in is on your website, you talk a little bit about educational outreach. What do you do with the kiddos, and what is your program like?
So we actually do a lot of traveling, and it's funny, as much as I moved out of Connecticut 4 years ago, I still go to Connecticut and we do a lot of schools. And it's not uncommon for, you know, schools to want a musher to come and talk. The difference with how I do it is that I take the entire team, and I prefer to do it, and I will only do it actually outside. So I think it's really nice for the kids to come outside and they can see the dogs standing by their trucks. They see all the gear, and then we talk about races and what it takes to train a team. But the really cool thing is once you pick up a harness and every once in a while I'll put it on one of the dogs, the kids are really amazed at seeing how excited the dogs are for that. And it's just a great way to show people, you know, you can make a dog sit and lay down and stay, but you cannot make a dog want to run. You know, and that's what they need to see is that how much these dogs love this. And they're a lot calmer than people think. My guys love kids, which is funny because, you know, I don't have any. They are my kids. But it's great for them to see how calm they are, how well-behaved, and then you get to see them how excited they are and how routine. I mean, even little things. Like, for instance, you know, I have a dog truck that has 16-hole box in the back of the back bed, and the dogs get excited the second you pop the first door open. Everybody puts their feet up and they know what order and which box is theirs, so it's nice to show them, other than just talking about it, and how much these dogs love this life.
And you know, there's a heck of a lot of lessons that you could teach right there. You could teach teamwork and sportsmanship and eagerness and persistence and a little bit of everything in just a short half hour to hour program, with especially with kids that have not been around sled dogs, say kids that live in the city, or you know, that may only have either never had a dog in their life, or they only have that one dog, as we always say, that is just kind of laying around on the couch. You can really teach a lot of lessons that way, can't you?
We teach a ton, especially like you just said, you know, the appropriate way to meet a dog that you don't know. Just like you said, everybody's friends have a dog that just lays on the couch. That dog's fine if you walk up and you pet it on the top of the head. But, you know, putting your hand down is better. And it's just, there is a lot for them to know, you know, 16 dogs on my team, and it doesn't mean that every single one of them love to be next to each other. Do they tolerate it? Yes, because they all love what they're doing. And for the most part, my entire guys are more like a wolf pack. We all get along, but it doesn't mean someone's not going to bump heads. And there's just so much in just a half an hour of, you know, conversation, what you can teach them, right down to the little ones. Like, some of my smallest dogs are my hardest working dogs. And some of the smaller kids love hearing that detail and knowing that there's,
right,
doesn't mean just, you know, what you see is what you get.
Right. Big things come in small packages, as they say. Becky, what's next for you this year coming up into winter? Are you planning on any bigger races? Are you planning on just getting out there and enjoying the winter trails? What's up?
So this year is the first year that I decided I'm going to stop working. I went back to emergency medicine, and I'm going to try to take some time off in November and focus more on my team. When I worked in Connecticut, I made more money as a physical therapist than you do as a veterinary technician. And I usually only work 25 to 30 hours. Since we've moved up here after my first winter, I've been the usual 40-hour-a-week person. I live in a very cold house that only has a wood stove with, you know, lots of cracks and no insulation in it. So my bedroom sometimes 32 degrees. When I go to, great training for a musher.
Right.
So this year I decided I don't want to work the 9-to-5 job. I want to give back to my team. And we actually had another – it's amazing. Sometimes when you put things out there for the universe – and you pay attention, things come back. And we're going to be doing tours for the first year. There's a resort in Whitefield, New Hampshire, that actually has hooked this up. So besides me training my pro team, I'm actually going to take the other tour team, the other dogs, who I now call the tour team. They're the ones that can't quite hang with the speed with the main dogs. And we're going to do tours 3 days a week.
Excellent.
So that means my entire winter will be dogs.
That's awesome, and it's a great way to build up, you know, the stamina and conditioning for your dog. Obviously, I'm preaching to the choir to somebody that does physical therapy, but that's a great way to get your dogs into shape for those much longer runs for sure. Okay, last question that I always ask all of my guests is, if a person's just getting involved in mushing, whether they're, you know, the one or two dog team, rec team, or somebody that's thinking about moving to the next step of doing mid-distance or Iditarod someday, what is one piece of advice you could give to those guys or gals from what you've learned over the years?
Don't get so focused on all the work. I mean, you have to make
good
sure
advice.
This is something you love to do. You know, you want to, you know, you got to just enjoy. Take a breath and love it. And that will tell you how much of it you really want to be in.
Great advice. You know, slow down and make sure you enjoy what you're going to do for sure. All right, Becky, how can folks find you on the internet? Do you have a website? Are you on Facebook? How can folks follow you on the trail?
We're on both, of course. We have a website. It's www.outlawridgesleddogs.com. And then our Facebook page is just Outlaw Ridge. And some really good things, cool things with the Facebook page is that even when I'm out there running the 250, I have some great people that are posting current and up-to-date info on how the race is going and where I am in the checkpoints. And so the Facebook page is definitely probably the most up-to-date these days.
You know, I think Facebook was a game changer for mushing. All of us do exactly what you said. We have, you know, our friends and family updating us. We're on the trail. It's sort of like, you know, I guess a website is sort of like a flyer, and the Facebook is like our journal. And I think that's a good way to think about it. You know, and we can go out there and just really, really connect with our fans and our friends on Facebook. And I think it's really become a game changer in the sled dog world. Do you agree?
I totally agree.
Excellent. Well, Becky, hang tight after we close, and we'll talk for a bit. But otherwise, have a great day, and we'll see you guys next time on Mushroom Radio. Goodbye.